You're listening to highlights from OTB AM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Now, it's been a huge story here this week, the case of a young rugby player who took some anabolic steroids, was banned for a couple of years, and post that then obviously is back in the game. So we wanted to get a bit of a sense from somebody who'd been there and done that. So it's been a big topic here this week, get a sense of all of that, what drives you to do it, the scale of the issue, and much, much more. And to do that, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by former Italy and Ulster forward Carlo Del Fava from Durban. Good morning, Carlo.
Morning, Ewan. How are you? You all right?
Very good. Thanks, William, for taking our call as well this morning. I don't know what time it is in Durban, actually.
We are 10:05 this morning, yeah?
Very good. You're ahead of us. You're ahead of us, as always. Listen, your case, obviously, and this is why we want to speak to you, is very similar to the case that has arisen here this week. 20 years of age in your case. You know, you took an anabolic steroid, you were caught, you served a two-year ban. Can we get straight into it, if you don't mind? Because we're interested to pick through some of the detail of that. We think that it's an interesting test case. Why did you take what you took?
Well, yeah, just wasn't big enough, wasn't strong enough to cope with the level of rugby that I was playing then. I was in a Super Rugby squad as a 19-year-old, and you've obviously got performance norms that you need to meet and criteria that you need to meet, and I was nowhere near. I mean, a 19-year-old in a Super Rugby squad that can do two pull-ups and a one rep max on the bench press is 80 kgs. It's you're way off the mark. So having to try and cope with that pressure of trying to be up there and stay with the group that's moving really, really quickly, you look for a way to try and shortcut that, and it ends you up in hot water, and that's what happened.
Do you remember the specific moment that you thought, I'm going to have to go and do this?
Not really. It was more just compounded effect of that compounding pressure over and over and over of looking for another option. And the more hours you spent in the gym, and the body just wasn't at that stage of development to cope with that sort of workload, you know?
Were you aware of the cliff edge enormity almost, Carlo, of what it was that you were about to do when you chose to take that route?
Do you know what, Owen? I wasn't. And that's the scary part, is that I was so concentrated and so narrow-minded in your focus that you lose sight of the bigger picture completely and utterly. It becomes such a personal thing that you don't actually see the people around you that it affects. You don't see the long-term effect of it. You don't see the compounding effect of having that stigma with you forever. It never goes away. It constantly, I mean, here we are 14 years later and we're still talking about the same issue, and it's still real as if it almost happened two weeks ago. And when you're in that frame of mind, you don't think about it at all. It doesn't even come into your mind. It doesn't even come into question. You're just so focused on achieving that goal that, well, me personally anyway, that you lose sight of all of that completely.
Are there others, I mean, when you... the moment that leads you to that moment almost, are there others? Because I know there was another couple of underage players pinged in South Africa roughly around the same time for roughly the same thing. Like, is it a conversation that you're having around the gym, around the team? Are you aware of others doing it at the time? Like, that might actually almost normalize some of that decision, I guess.
You know what? It's quite important that you mention that, because it wasn't a conversation that I'd had with anybody else, which was the funny thing about it. It was something that that I'd taken in isolation, looking to better myself in the wrong way, and ultimately paying a big price for it. And the consciousness, we were aware of other players being banned for failing doping tests. We were aware of them. We knew the consequences of it. But at the same time, it wasn't something that was spoken openly about it in the group and openly as if it was a casual thing that everybody spoke about, you know? It wasn't that case at all. It was a case of doing something in secret that to better your performance, when in actual fact you didn't actually really need to do it. But in your mind, you're thinking, this is the right thing to do. This is what I need to do to get to that level. And it's the completely wrong outlook to have about the whole thing as well.
Was there anybody aware that you had chosen this route? I mean, relations, family, friends? Was there anybody that you were, you could say, listen, I've taken this road, I feel as if I haven't any option, but this is what I'm doing. Was there anybody you were speaking to about it at that time?
Not at the time when it happened, but literally about 2 hours after the doping officials came to the house to test me. Funny enough, I was actually on my way home back to the Eastern Cape to for the Christmas holidays, and I decided to not take the early morning drive down. Instead, had training, obviously, after training, take a rest and then drive down after that. And it was in that time that the doping officials came to the house to test me. And I knew straight away, I said, well, that's it. It's all done then, you know. Took the drive back to the Eastern Cape, sat down with my mom and said to her, listen, there's something coming here. This is what I've done. This is what the consequences are probably going to be of what I've done, and just expect something really bad. That was the first time I actually approached anybody about it. And then subsequently, when the results came out, the timings were a lot different then. Got tested in middle of December, and the results came out middle of January, really, you know. So it was a month. It was a month of waiting to see what would happen. Would the results come back? And then when they found the positive test within the system, the disciplinary committee from South African Rugby gave me a ring and said, "Look, you're suspended instantly for failing a doping test. Please leave the team, and you face obviously disciplinary charges, and you need to have a hearing."
I guess you speak to your mom. I guess you don't speak to. I mean, on the basis that maybe I get away with this, you probably don't speak to your club or your employers or your teammates about it in that period.
Everyone broke up holidays. Yeah, it wasn't a thing of even trying to think that. Your first instinct is to go for something of confidence, something that someone you can confide in, somebody that you can obviously express your deepest feelings, and that's who I went to. And at the same time, when you are waiting for the test, when the result came back as positive, that's when you obviously go to everybody and you tell them, look, it's don't even test the B sample. It's a waste of time. I've done what I've done. And you take all the punishment that comes your way. Yeah.
Morning, Carlo. My question here is that I find it hard to believe that this thing can exist in a vacuum, that you mentioned that you were trying to keep up with the rest of your teammates, but at this point you were an under-21 Springbok. You knew that you were one of the most talented rugby players in your age group, so you knew you had the potential to make it. So I find it hard to believe that you invented this idea that you should go out on your own and dope yourself. I'm not sure if this kind of thing can exist in a vacuum. Like, You don't do this thing unless you believe that there is a chance of success, ultimately, do you? Like, surely you thought that you could have gone completely under the radar and nobody would have caught you doing drugs. So, like, was there outside influences? Was there somebody, you don't have to name names, but did you hear of other instances where potentially this thing could be a full success for you?
No, not at all. And the thing is, there was the complete ignorance around the whole thing as well, and not understanding what the side effects of taking anabolic steroids does to your body, and not understanding what you are actually injecting into your system. It's a synthetic hormone that just causes so much carnage. It's not supposed to be there. The human body is not supposed to ingest that type of thing. And it was obviously that sense of having instant gratification of seeing a goal so close and wanting it right there and then, and not understanding that there's a process of development that you need to go to be able to play at that top level. And it's not something that just happens straight out of being an under 21 player. And at the time, I was still under 20. I still had one more year of under 21 to play. And I wanted to be that player that played at Super Rugby level, or let alone be involved with it at a really young age. And just not understanding the whole concept of time and development and maturity, and it's a mess. You can't comprehend the ramifications of what you are doing at that age when you're in such conflict of what decisions to make. You know, now you look back and you reflect, and it's easy to make the right conclusion to a decision, but then you aren't really. It's not something that comes to your mind.
What you were taking, Carlo, was for bulk, right?
Yeah, it was for strength. It wasn't so much for bulk. It was more for strength than for size, and to meet the norms in my testing, you know, because I was so way off. It wasn't even on the scale, let alone within the norms. I wasn't even on there. That's how far away I was. but physically, yet on the field, I was able to do what I needed to do. But as far as taking those repeated impacts all the time at that level, that physical capability that I had, I wouldn't be able to do it.
How do you, it was an injection, I think, if I'm right. Am I correct to that?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Do you give that to yourself, or does somebody else give it to you?
Well, do you know what, Ewan, I'm actually, it's one question that, because we are on video at the moment, and it is something that I've had previous experience with in answering, it's not something that I can actually answer while on video and while it's obviously open to the public domain, purely because, and I'll give you the reason why. A few years ago, I did a seminar at a school for Keep Rugby Clean and anti-doping, and I was quite involved with the process of educating the youngsters and what they needed to do. And it was under the impact of absolute full disclosure, ask any question you like, I'll be there to answer it, and I did that. And you wouldn't believe it, but a few months after that, a parent came to me to explain that their son had gone through a similar process after I had spoken to them and after I had done all this awareness program with them. And he had pretty much followed exactly what I had told him was my experience and how I took it. So regardless of what I had said, it made no difference to him. He was still on that road. He was bound to make that decision. And he sort of used the information that I'd given him to use it in the way that he felt fit. So it's very important that it is an awareness that I need to be of what I need to say, obviously, on video, and what I need to say when it is being recorded. Because it is, you don't want people to interpret that in the wrong way and use that as a guideline of how to dope. So it's very important that I'm careful how I answer that question.
Just on that point, in terms of speaking to people about doping and telling them to avoid doping in rugby, ultimately, if I'm sitting in a seminar hall listening to what you're saying, obviously I'm affected by what you're saying, and I guess I am deterred to a certain level, but I'm not deterred fully, because ultimately your professional career continues, and I would say if I followed your career, I could still dope, get banned and come back, just like Gerbrand Grobler is right now, and still get paid and play to a high level. The risk isn't having your career ended, the risk is getting banned for 2 years.
Well, that ban's actually been escalated to 4 now, so you're not coming back after 4 years. 2 years, it's almost, you know, it's a very long time to not do anything. 4 years is a totally different animal completely. You're not the same person physically. It's been escalated to 4, so there's no ways you're coming back after 4 years, regardless.
The Grobler situation at the moment is a 2-year ban for an anabolic steroid, which science proves does give you long-term benefits. So still, when I look at the Grobler situation, and as you say, 4 years is quite a lot in fairness too, it is recoverable. Like, you can't come back from 2 years. Grobler is doing it. And even yourself, you managed to come back after a 2-year ban. Like, we can get into the length of bans in a moment, but just on that, I'm not sure, is it a deterrent? Is it deterrent enough at the moment to hear your stories and to think that, right, my career is going to be destroyed? I think that it's a fair point to say that your career may go dormant for a couple of years.
Well, the thing is, who then takes you in after that 4-year period once you're looking for a place to play, once you're looking for a club to play? Well, now all of a sudden Munster have got a policy which I think they would actually adopt, in that they wouldn't actually sign players that have had a history of doping. And they have every right to do that. Obviously, people are very protective of something that they hold sacred. And to have that influence and have that negative stigma around the team, some people can't cope with that. Some people aren't able to look past some people's past mistakes, whether they've admitted them or not. And it's just the maturity level, that whether they have it or not, it's their own personal thing, you know. Is that something that I've got to deal with on a yearly month, at least every month something about it comes up, whether it's work-related, whether it's past rugby-related, whether it's media-related like yourselves. And I'm very outspoken about it because I know the experience that I had. It's not something that we need to brush under the carpet. It's something that the likes of yourself need to bring up and speak about. It's not something that needs to be hidden. It's not something that needs to be put in a cupboard and put in, oh, it's not part of us. It doesn't exist. It does exist, and people need to speak about it. They need to have the courage to face what they've spoken about. So it's important that we answer these hard questions.
Glad to hear you say that, Carlo, because we've had a bunch of interesting conversations about having these conversations this week. There's been a lot of conversation as well about South Africa. There's been some sort of euphemisms used during the week about you know, players coming from a different environment in South Africa, or a different culture in South Africa, hinting almost that South Africa has a bigger issue with this thing, which isn't to let Ireland wash our hands of this problem at all. But I am interested to get your take on where South Africa is at in terms of its, in terms of that doping culture currently.
Well, all the provincial players at school level, for instance, if you start at the bottom, they're all tested on a regular basis. All of them that are in a system, whether it's a high performance system, whether it's a system in the provincial leagues, they're all tested. That process is tested. And once you move out of that into an academy system and into a rugby club stroke age group level provincially, as well as Super Rugby, where that's nearly a monthly occurrence where people are tested. It's something that before wasn't a regular occurrence, where now people are tested more often. So to get away with it, it's nearly impossible. But it's interesting because when you look at it from a rugby schoolboy point of view, the volume of players that are playing top level school rugby in South Africa is huge compared to any other country, purely because of the volume. So if you take that ratio compared to volume of players and people that are caught doping against a smaller country with less players, you'd find a similarity. I'm quite involved with the academy at the Sharks Rugby as well, and quite involved with the school rugby in the province as well. And it's something that comes up all the time, and I'm very outspoken about it because I've got first-hand experience in dealing with it from a coaching point of view, from dealing it from a player's point of view, from dealing it from even the media point of view. And it's something that I spend a lot of time doing and educating the guys on about it, because it's important that it comes from somebody that's done it and that's been there, that experienced the pressures of it. And it could be something that they're thinking about.
Do you think, Carlo, that has an impact, or what are your thoughts about how we make players make better decisions in that regard?
It's education. The reason why it's a two-year ban is because anabolic steroid is in your system for 18 to 24 months. It's not something that you take and 2 weeks later it disappears out your system like it would a protein shake. And at that time, that's something that I didn't even realize. I didn't even know. There was an awareness of it. There was just complete ignorance. And that has probably led to the downfall of what I did. Whereas now, with that education system in place, those players understand that, listen, this is something serious. It's not something that you can take and play around with that doesn't have any consequences on your actions. It's something, and the more you educate people about it, the more they're aware of it. And if people are scared to speak about it, nothing will ever get done and nothing will ever change. So that's just my point of view on the whole thing.
I read a comment of yours in the process of researching for this piece that sent chills down my spine, I have to say, and you've just touched on it, and I'd like to get your thoughts a bit further on it here, because the schools game here is a very healthy thing, and as you pointed out already, there are great rewards at the end of it. You were on the record recently as saying that at schoolboy level, there's a long way to go in the fight against doping. That's possibly the most concerning sentence and aspect of this entire piece.
Okay, well, it goes back to the education point of view. It's if they understand what's involved in it, then everyone involved in it as well will speak about it, and they'll be able to identify players that are potentially doing it, players that are thinking about doing it. And unless you've got the experience of understanding what those markers are, how would you ever know? You'd never know. So who's the best person to educate them on it is somebody that's got first-hand experience in doing it. So jump in and do it, do the education. And obviously the opinions of people are their own, and how they judge you, it's up to them. You know, it's my personal principle that no matter what happens, I'll still be outspoken about it, and I'll never brush it under the carpet to hide it away as if it wasn't part of my career.
One of the things that's often trotted out around this time is that rugby today isn't as bad as it was 10, 15 years ago, and the chances of doping are getting less and less and less. But you said at the start of this piece that you felt that you weren't big enough to make it to Super Rugby in South Africa. right now people need to get bigger, younger. So to me, that seems like the incentive to dope is coming a lot faster at you, and the need to do it is a lot higher, or the actual, I suppose, appeal of doing drugs at this point is a lot higher than it used to be, because you need to be bigger now than you used to be. Do you agree with that, or do you feel that testing is actually working?
No, I don't agree with you completely. It's a very good point as well. The players nowadays are under a huge amount of pressure compared to what we were, purely because, well, one is social media didn't exist then. It wasn't a thing. Facebook wasn't even invented then. So getting first-hand information is constantly available to somebody. So they esteem to get higher in rugby. They're exposed all the time to players that they look up to, and they see what they do. They see how their careers have moved on, the financial benefits of playing at that high level. So they have all of that information to process as well. And they also then have the information to process from their development system, where they have to improve all the time. And not just physically, but technically, as well as emotionally on a maturity level as well. So they've got that to deal with too. And you've still got that social pressure of having that constant information at your hand every single time. You pick up the phone, you've got that information, you've got that pressure, you're constantly there all the time. And the players that are coming in now that are young, they weren't young, and we were young, but we weren't technically sound as these players are now today, which means they've been in the system for a lot longer. So you're talking about somebody who's been in the system for 14, 15 year old, who's been in an academy system, in a high performance system, and they're getting drip fed this information constantly all the time. So they're being looked after, one, which is a good thing. They've got that education at hand, which is a good thing as well. But they've also got that added pressure of stay in the system. You're going to be a superstar at 15. Just do what you need to do to get up there.
We're going to wrap in a minute, Carlo. We've had a bunch of comments coming in, and I'll give you a couple of those in a second. But before that, Chris Henry, who I think would have been in the dressing room around the same time as you when you were at Ulster, he was probably just coming through at that point. I don't know if you've seen his quotes this week, but he said it was unacceptable that Munster would sign a proven doper, in his words. Interested to get your take on that. And also, where do you stand on lifetime bans for taking things like anabolic steroids, which are very clear-cut in terms of their direct implication? It would be pretty, like, when you talk about the education piece and all that, it too would be a pretty big deterrent.
Well, yeah, well, let's start with Chrissy Henry. He's a brilliant player and a top man. He was coming through the ranks when I was at Ulster, and it's a type of player that his character would never ever be in question, never in doubt. Physically, he'd always be the one right on the line, constantly working hard to achieve what he needed to achieve. A good character in the team, a young leader as well at the time too. So if he's quite opinionated about what Munster need to do, I think he's earned the right. He's earned the right to have that opinion. And you've got to respect him for it as well. So it's not somebody that, even though he said that and what he has said and his stance on the whole thing, is not somebody that I wouldn't speak to or chat to about. You know what I mean? We've played alongside each other.
I presume you think he's wrong.
Say again?
I presume you think he's wrong.
Not at all. I think he's absolutely right. He's got a stand. He's got a principle. He's got a stand. He's got a view that he's expressed. And it's his opinion, and he's earned the right to express that opinion as well, and publicly too. So you can never hold that against him. I'd be more upset if people didn't have an opinion about it, which means nobody really cared. So the fact that people do have an opinion about it is vital, vital, vitally important.
So just on that lifetime ban question then, where do you stand on that?
Well, it's obviously not a decision that I've got to make. That's a decision that the powers that be, the World Rugby, it's something that they need to look at. Why have they made it why have they made it 2 years? Why have they now escalated to 4 years? It's not a question that I can answer. It's something that the powers that be will decide. Yeah?
Talk to us about your time at Ulster, Carlo. How high on the agenda was your doping ban when you were signed by Ulster? Did you have conversations with the IRFU about this? Did you have conversations with your teammates in Ulster, or indeed the top brass at Ulster, about this? Did it manifest itself in any way at all during your time at the province?
In the beginning, it didn't. I signed from Bourgoin, the French club. Signed from them, did our pre-season. There was nothing. It wasn't really brought up. I was obviously always open to speak about it and have a chat with them and discuss all those things, you know, but at the time it wasn't something that was high on the agenda. a year
into Carlo, isn't it, that it wouldn't come up almost over the course of like a contract negotiation. It's definitely surprising that the employer side wouldn't say, listen, we know we've got this track record, where do you stand on that now? But you're saying that didn't even come up.
Well, I don't think it was relevant at the time when we were signing a contract. It was more about a performance and where I feel I fitted into the team. If they did want to speak about it, I was more than open to. But at the same time, they obviously knew that I did come with a lot of baggage, you know. And even during my time at Ulster, there wasn't really anybody that that brought it up, that that had their strong opinions about it. It wasn't really discussed. I mean, I never felt any antagonized by the players by it, or anybody had their strong opinions that they voiced it to my face, at least, you know. We were also at Ulster going through a transition time at that point as well. We had a caretaker coach. Mark McCaw was in for 3 months and then left. So there was other focuses at Ulster at that time, and I was definitely least of those focuses. I was just trying to find place in the team and where I needed to contribute, you know.
It's a shame it didn't come up. I mean, for all the reasons that you've just outlined brilliantly over the last 15 or 20 minutes, it's a shame that somebody didn't say, listen, here's a guy who chose this path, he regrets it, he shouldn't have done it, it's not a good path to choose for these reasons. It's a shame that somebody didn't say, geez, Carlo, you could actually impart some of the well-communicated points that you're describing now to these guys at Ulster. It feels to me to have been, I mean, naive and also a bit of a missed opportunity.
But I think at the time as well, it wasn't something that was really hot topic, you know. There wasn't an issue about it at the time. There weren't many players that were coming overseas that were banned. There wasn't a big controversy about it like there is now, you know. So it's I can understand it from their point of view as well. So if they did and they needed some awareness done about it, I was obviously more than happy to do it, because obviously I have a responsibility. I gave up that right to not speak about it when I made that decision to do what I did. They had all the rights to do that and just try and put me in a position to make others aware about it too.
I just have one last question, Carlo. The piece wasn't really about getting into the culture in South Africa, but just briefly, like, when you hear somebody from South Africa getting popped for doping, are you surprised? Like, I'm going to stick my neck out here and say this. Your initial reaction is, oh, not again.
No, totally surprised, because you think all the structures that are in place and all the testing procedures, as well as the level that people are getting tested at the moment, you're thinking, how can someone possibly, after seeing my video on YouTube, they are aware that these things happen, why would you then still go and do that after somebody's trying to explain to you the pitfalls of going down that road?
Because the testing doesn't work, most probably.
Well, it does work because they get banned.
Well, sir, we know that people get banned, but there's a high there's a high probability there that there's a lot more people who aren't getting banned, that there are... A line that is trundled out quite a bit by cyclists in the Tour de France is that they list off the people who get popped at the start of every tour, and they're like, well, that's great, it shows that the testing is working, but we don't know what fraction that is. You could be right, it could be 100%. I have my doubts.
Exactly. I wouldn't know either. I'm not that involved with the testing side of things, you know. But obviously, for people to get banned, it means there are testing structures in place. If nobody gets banned, and later on in their career when they're up at the top and then they do get banned, then it's like, well, something's not right. But World Rugby are doing a phenomenal job in creating, well, just with the under-20 system alone, with the championship they have every year, they've got the Drug-Free Sport Day, Keep Rugby Clean Day as well. I was very instrumental in doing those awareness programs with them as well. And it's at that level, it shouldn't happen. It means somebody's gone out of the system, just exactly what I did, on their own accord, to do something where their ambitions just get way ahead of them and they can't understand the consequences of it.
Carlo, just a couple of comments in before we let you away. Bally Agron on Twitter here, who's a Munster fan, is wondering why there wasn't a huge outcry about Carlo Del Fava when he joined Ulster. Also says that Chris Henry's a hypocrite, so I'm not sure if he's coming in on your side there or not. Paul Kennedy says, give it a rest. Okay, we get that you're outraged. That tends to be the general tone of comment that we've gotten over the course of the week. Plenty of people very interested to hear your story, needless to say. And a bit of a flavour of that reaction is from Andrew Loughlin here, who says that Carlo is some man. He speaks extremely well on this, and while he cheated, he's doing all the right things in raising the issues and being so open about it. And you've been very good with your time, Carlo. We really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us this morning. Thanks a lot.
I really appreciate it. Just on that, I mean, Chrissy Henry, if there was any man that would back you up in the heat of the battle, it would be him. As a last man, that's integrity and personality ever needs to be in question. And it's somebody that I'll be on the front line with at any beck and call. You know, is a top bloke, and I really appreciate him for taking that stance as well and be principled. Some guys don't have the courage to stand up and voice their opinion like he has. So yeah, he's still. Still a top man in my book, sir.
Yeah, you almost don't expect it from a current player, and we've had enough of those comments this week as well. Carlo, thanks a lot. Take it easy.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.